Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this very special edition of the Square Ball Podcast. I'm Dan Moylan, with me Michael Normanson.
Hello.
And Moscow White, Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
And we have ourselves a guest today as well, author James Willoughby, who's written a book which he's brought copies of for us. It's called Ups and Downs, and it's available now, James?
Correct, yes. Thanks for having me.
So which part of Leeds are you from then? Because that's, I'm struggling to pick out the accent.
Yeah, very long way away from Melbourne in Australia, but one of the many global fans who are fascinated by Leeds and have been for some time. As we all know, it's a fascinating football club and big following in Australia. I'm just one of many.
So what drew you towards Leeds then when you were over in Oz?
I watched Leeds play in Australia in 2002. They came out for a pre-season friendly against Colo Colo. I'm sure you all remember it. It was a bumper clash. Mm-hmm. And I was 11 years old at the time. Leeds were a big deal in Australia at the time. We had Mark Viduka and other certain Australians at the club at the time. And yeah, I was sort of just getting into British football. It's not really a mainstream sport in Australia, even now, football. So it wasn't something that I grew up with, you know, as a young kid. But yeah, Leeds were a big deal at the time. My best mate in Australia at the time followed Leeds, and I went to that game and was hooked, and we've been rubbish ever since. So it's all my fault.
I was going to say, 17 years down the track, how do you feel about that decision?
Yeah, times I've regretted that, I think. But no, all part of the journey. And what I love about Leeds is just how fascinating the club is. You know, there's never a dull day, as you guys know and discuss on a regular basis. It's an incredible football club, no doubt about that.
Interested to get an Aussie take on Harry Kewell, who you skillfully skimmed past there. Because he's, you know, he's a bit of an Aussie legend, whereas he's not viewed quite so favourably in Leeds terms. How do you view him as an Aussie Leeds fan?
Yeah, interesting question. I do get a lot in Leeds when I'm sort of at matches, and that one of the first things a lot of people will ask me is what my thoughts are on Harry Kewell. And the response to that is sort of, I think my credibility is heavily sort of judged on that answer. Obviously, his legacy with Leeds fans is not great for obvious reasons. In Australia, though, you're right, he's viewed as one of the best players ever produced by the country. But, you know, we would have rather that, you know, certain moves that he made, he didn't.
I mean, because you can be a good footballer and a bit of a twat at the same time.
Yeah, that's very true. Plenty of examples of that across the world. But yeah, he's obviously his move to Turkey was a, you know, very controversial one at the time, particularly in Leeds. But back home, yeah, people like him and Mark Viduka and Craig Johnston, who was at Liverpool a bit earlier than that, they sort of put English football on the map.
Good stuff. So tell us about this book then, Ups and Downs. What's it about?
It is a bit of I suppose it's the flashpoints of Leeds' history told by the people who were involved directly. So there's more than 80 interviews in there with former players and managers. And the idea of the book, it sort of snowballed. But at the start, the idea was to pick out the sort of the high points and the low points, you know, the cup finals, winning the league, relegations, promotions, stuff like that, and then go and try and speak to as many people who are involved in the match. Because I think as fans, we can attend as many games as possible and watch as much, you know, content, but the people inside the four walls of a club have a slightly different take on it, and a lot happens in a football club that maybe we're not privy to.
So you've really done your homework then.
Yeah.
80 interviews, you've really well researched it, because a lot of these things you can find just almost secondhand reports. So 80 interviews, who's been the most fun then to speak to or most interesting? Which is the one that stands out?
probably the one who stands out for me the most is Mark Viduka, because he's pretty much the reason I follow Leeds, and such a interesting guy who's really, since retirement, disappeared from public spotlight. So for me, that was a thrill just because of, you know, what he meant to me, I suppose, as a kid, but then also his life since. This is a guy who captained Australia as well. So personally, that was quite a significant one. And obviously, he was a fantastic forward for Leeds. But, you know, there's very hard to pick a favourite from all the interviews, because, yeah, as you mentioned, there's quite a few and spanning, you know, several eras, including, you know, the side that really put Leeds on the map, I suppose, in the 60s and 70s.
So what is Viduka up to these days? What's he doing?
He lives in Croatia, and in terms of work-wise, it's not really a lot. Mark's relaxing, he says, and putting his feet up, which, you know, fair play to him. I reckon he deserves. He does. He did say, as a footballer, as a kid from Australia, he sacrificed, you know, so much family time during his career, going here, there, and everywhere, hotels before games, trips everywhere. Yeah, to quote him, now it's time to pay back to my family. So he's looking after his kids and enjoying the Croatian son.
Because he's Croatian-Australian, of course, isn't he? For the benefit of anybody who doesn't realise. So is he with family there then?
Yes, he is. Yeah, his wife's Croatian.
Right.
And, or definitely has Croatian heritage. I know that. And yeah, he's living over there with his kids. So he has spent a bit of time in Melbourne. I'm sure he goes back and forth a little bit too. But yeah, that's his place of residence. And I think he probably enjoys the, you know, not being in the spotlight, because, you know, in Australia, he wouldn't get that.
Is there anybody that you found different to how you expected in the book? Any surprises come up?
Yeah, I think every interview was surprising in its own way, because there was so many stories that you got told that, you know, I wasn't aware of. In terms of surprising, a few that stand out, I always knew they would be, you know, insightful interviews, but some of the people I'd spoke to that were involved at Leeds during the Chileno era were, you know, it was just incredible to hear some of the stuff that went on. And I still am staggered now, 5 years on, that weekend around that Huddersfield match, where we sacked the manager on Friday. We had, at one stage, Neil Redfern was taking the team, then it was Nigel Gibbs, then Brian was reinstated, Brian McDermott, during the match, and obviously came back to work on Monday, and then, you know, lasted a few more months. And in the week in the build-up to that game, we had this Italian who Massimo Cellino wanted to take over. Gianluca Festa was just lurking around the training ground, watching the players and essentially picking a team.
Was Brian McDermott bitter about it still? Because he always seems like a very nice, like almost like too nice of a guy to have done the Leeds job.
Yeah, I think he's not bitter at all, because, as you mentioned, he is so nice. He really wouldn't say too much negative stuff about Massimo Cellino, which I think he would have every right to do. Others did that, but Brian actually thanked him for sending him a card when his mother passed away, and Brian's mum was quite ill and ended up passing away just after his time at Leeds finished. And he was trying to juggle that and the job at Leeds, and Massimo sent him a card, and Brian wanted to put that on the record that, thanks to Massimo for sending the card. So he is just really a very nice man.
He did also call him out on the news, though, didn't he, for saying, where's Brian, when he knew that that's exactly where he was.
Yeah. I was just going to say, he was visiting his sick mother, and we all knew it at the time. It's interesting. So the public face of Cellino and what he's saying to, like, the cameras or whatever is different sometimes to maybe what you're seeing behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, Nigel Gibbs probably did a lot of Brian's talking for him on a few of those, you know, subjects. Not that Brian might have that view, but Nigel was pretty disappointed with a lot of the stuff that went on in that era. But Brian is, he was actually the first person I interviewed for the book, Brian. And at the time, you know, I didn't even know if it would end up finishing. You sort of got to start these things. You know, it's a bit of a roll of the dice, and a thoroughly nice man, and a guy who's just, I suppose, one of many managers gutted that it didn't work out, because he's someone who you know, was only at Leeds for a very short space of time, but properly loved his time.
And it's by no means like a book about glory then, this, because you delve into some of these darker times, the defeats. So what's perhaps the darkest time? Was it that Cellino era, or is there something else that's...
Definitely the most sort of difficult one to write, and the most difficult interviews were around the UEFA Cup semi-final in Turkey in 2000, just because of the emotion involved. Obviously, everyone listening to this knows what happened, and how football really wasn't that important at all. And, you know, the emotions are still extremely raw for, you know, all the players involved, to a man, all really disappointed that the game even went ahead. And, death threats getting rung through to the players the night before the game and things like this. It was a pretty horrible trip for everyone involved, really. So that was probably the most difficult one to write because, yes, it's a European semi-final, but it, as I said, it wasn't really that important at the end of the day. So striking that balance was key. But, yeah, that was a difficult one. And, I mean, the whole story of Leeds, it's not a positive story, the football club, entirely positive anyway. Yes, there are some highs. There are an awful lot of lows, particularly in the last 15 years. And I didn't want to write an airbrushed, you know, version of only the apps because, you know, it's only half the story.
Anybody refused to speak to you then? Anybody you'd like to have got on the record but wasn't available or wouldn't do
yeah,
it?
Yeah. I mean, in getting sort of 80 people or a little over 80, there are going to be quite a few people who say no along the way, and that's completely their prerogative. I think as a journalist, you know, I've been lucky enough to work in the industry for over a decade now. And, you know, as a journalist, when you ring people up, you're asking for a favour, really, for them to give you some of their time, and not everyone wants to do it, which is completely fair enough.
Did you reach out to Kuehl?
I didn't, no. Right. Not for this book, no. There's a lot of people involved in his era in the book anyway, as I mentioned, Mark Viduka, but people like Lee Bowyer, Jonathan Woodgate.
Jacob Burns.
Yeah, he's in there. Yeah. He is, Norm, yep. Olivier Decor, Dominic Matteo, people like that, they're all in there. So I didn't want to sort of overload the book too with 15 people from one team because it's important to give each person and their views enough time, I suppose, to breathe in the chapter.
Yeah, I think the danger with Kuehl as well is it then becomes about him. Too much.
Very likely, Dan, very likely.
It could distract a little bit away from the main narrative, which is telling the story of Leeds United. So what about Bowyer and Woodgate? Because that sounds like a fascinating insight.
Yeah, both guys who are extremely passionate about Leeds. I think we've seen that in the last, you know, 6 months. We saw after Charlton beat Leeds at the Valley a couple of months ago, Lee giving the Leeds salute as he walked off, and Johnny Woodgate's side, they got thumped a couple of weeks ago, and after the game he's talking about how great Leeds are and I hope they go up. So it clearly has left an impact on those two guys, as those examples show. And, you know, those interviews were with the premise of talking about, you know, the matches. And while there is a lot of stuff about Leeds and, you know, what was happening at the club around about the time, yeah, those guys were more keen to talk about the matches that they were involved in.
And what about that O'Leary era? How's that reflected on by the people that you spoke to now? Because time has been a little bit more unkind to David O'Leary maybe than it was thought of at the time.
Just a huge sense of regret, Dan, from all those players that they never won anything because they firmly believed they were good enough, and had they had even one more season together, because they didn't win anything as a group, and that really grates on a lot of the players, particularly Olivier Decor, who went on to win a couple of Serie A titles in Italy, and he just says he can't understand why that team never won anything. But the team was broken apart by, as we know, the well-documented financial problems. They didn't get the chance, really. I mean, they went European semi-final in successive years, and the shit hit the fan shortly after, and that was it. So, yeah, I think a lot of frustration from the players that, yeah, we had this great team, you know, people were talking about us like we were going to be the next Manchester United, not that we would want to be exactly that, but,
better than those lot.
We would want to be challenging for trophies. Yeah. That was the point, and all those players firmly believed that they would have done that, and they never got the chance.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So where do you travel to then when you're putting all this together? Did you see the core in France then? And maybe did you go to Croatia for Viduka?
I did go to Croatia to see Viduka. There was quite a lot of interviews done just up and down the UK basically. So I came over in March to sort of finish the second half of it. The first half, there were a lot of interviews on the phone as well. But yeah, it's much better when you can get to go and see somebody, as you guys would know. You know, it's a better interview and, you know, they open up a little bit more. So yeah, there was a lot of travel involved. And the project, it certainly blew up a lot more than I, sort of snowballed is probably the right word, into a lot bigger project than I anticipated it being. But yeah, I'm happy it's finished. It was a big task, but you know, I sit here looking at it and yeah, I'm proud of the way it's come up.
Can you give people an insight into how much work that is? Because 80 interviews doesn't really get across. You've got to do the preparation. You've got to do the actual interview. There's the transcribing it. Yeah. There's the, because it's not laid out as player by player interviews either. It's match by match. So yeah, it's then sorting everything else. So how long did this take and how much work?
That speaks the weary author.
Well, I mean,
he's a man who knows.
Me and Dan have written probably a few books, but just haven't published them yet.
Yeah.
I might have mentioned a book that I've written recently on this podcast once or twice, but what's interesting is like, I deliberately did not interview many people because I know exactly what a ball ache it can be. And so I was like, yeah, I am not getting involved in all that. And you've gone and done the harder version in a way.
Oh, I don't know about that. I didn't delve into
better version.
No, it's not fair at all.
But complimentary version.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, the interviews, I mean, obviously there's so many people you've got to go through to get access to these people, be it agents or, you know, their former clubs or, you know, people involved in the game, media managers, press officers, all these sort of things. So setting up the interviews isn't easy. As you mentioned, there's research. I mean, the transcribing was the killer because a lot of these interviews were for an hour or more. And it takes, you know, 5, 6, 7 hours to transcribe an hour of quotes, and it's bloody painstaking to do so as well. So yeah, there's that involved, and then formulating it all, as you said, in the chapters. So this has taken 18 months to do. I've had some other work around that, but yeah, it's been pretty much 9 months of intense work since I got to Leeds in March. So yeah, it was a lot of work, as you know, Daniel, putting it together. It's a difficult task, but you know, we sit there and both, you know, pretty, well, hopefully happy with the end outcome, and hopefully it's an insightful read. That was my aim when I started this, to take, you know, it's a bit cliche, but take readers behind the scenes at Leeds and what was really going on at halftime. And I've sort of really tried to, in terms of the matches, take readers into the dressing room. What was being said at halftime? What was going on beforehand? And there's so many fascinating tales of different things happening in different games. So hopefully it's an insightful read to anyone who picks up a copy.
Is that what you think it adds to the Leeds United lexicon? A look at things in a way that we've not had before.
Well, I mean, there's been similar books being written. But yeah, that was the aim, to just really tell their version of the story. So my writing is not extensive in this book. It's joining the dots between, you know, one player or one manager's quotes to the other, and also setting the scene. You know, why is this game important? Stuff like that. But in all instances, I've preferred to let the players or the managers do that talking instead, because at the end of the day, no one really wants to or cares what I think, but they care what, you know, the people involved think.
So you said it snowballed. How did it start then in your mind, when way back 18 months ago, before this became what it is now, sat on the table here, this book?
To be honest, I don't know. I think with all these things, you're a little naive. You know, I'd never written a book before, and maybe I had my task on, or my eyes set on 40 or 50 interviews. And it, as I said, it ended up being a tick over 80. I didn't know how many games were going to be in, and it was entirely dependent on who I could speak to. But the beauty of coming and actually being in Leeds and, you know, coming back to a city that I love and I've spent quite a few years living in previously, is going to meet a few of the older players and, you know, oh, have you spoken to this person? You know, it was just sort of rolled on from there with different contacts. But, you know, I couldn't, for instance, write a chapter on, you know, winning the league in 1969 if I didn't speak to half the team who were playing at Anfield against Liverpool that day. So I needed those people to be in the book to tell that story. So was lucky enough, and I'm really grateful that so many people trusted in me to tell their story, particularly being someone from the other side of the world, because I can certainly tell I got a lot of funny reactions when I picked up the phone and rung a lot of these people. You could just hear almost the other end of the phone dies. They put the phone down and someone going, what the hell is an Australian ringing me about a Leeds United book for? But after a bit of explanation and a bit of coercing, most of them were really helpful, which was fantastic.
So did you fly in and stay over in this country and purposefully just for the purpose of writing the book then?
Yeah. That was the plan. So I did work in Leeds for a couple of years in my 20s. It was the first time I met Michael in some nondescript boozer, I'm sure. But I came back to Leeds. I got a lot of mates here. I really love the city. I love the north of England. Just think it's a fantastic place. But yeah, to come back was purely to write the book. There was the added bonus of we were in an exciting promotion push, which, you know.
Almost. Is that in the book as well then?
No, I haven't. I deliberately haven't put any of the Marcelo Bielsa era in the book because for me the story is not even half completed yet. And I think that I hope people will pick this book up in 10, 20, 30 years because the matches in the book will certainly still be relevant. And to sort of put a full stop on his era at Leeds halfway through, I think is unfair because, you know, we all hope that there's a more positive end to the story. And I also think too, with the interviews are far better and people speak with far more openness, if you like, once they're out of the system. You know, they're still playing at Leeds or they're still involved in professional football. They're less reticent to be critical. I mean, let's be honest, that, you know, they don't want to offend people or say the wrong thing. But once you got players who are out of the system or retired, they're a lot more open. And that's ultimately what people want to read. You know, people don't want to read cliches and, you know, oh, we tried our best, but it didn't work. You know, we want to read why didn't it work? What went wrong? What was to blame? That sort of stuff. There, you know, who knows? It take a few years to come around to it, but it might be an addition to, Dan.
Thoughts on Bielsa's Leeds then?
I love watching the football at the minute. That's my initial thought. I think we're playing a bit more pragmatically this year, which is obviously having a great impact. And it's just exciting to watch Leeds again. It's been pretty dull for quite a while. 15 years it has been, obviously, since we're in the top flight. And yeah, we certainly haven't played as well in that time. But what I really love is how it's sort of recaptured the city's imagination. Mm. The away following has been tremendous, certainly ever since I started getting into Leeds. But to see Ellen Road full every week, we're all off tonight to a game against Hull, midweek game sold out at Ellen Road. I mean, that just hasn't happened for years, has it? So particularly in December, it's not like it's the end of the season next week. So yeah, the city is buzzing about Leeds United again. People are wearing Leeds United merchandise everywhere you look. There's posters of Daniel up at outside the front of WH Smith's yesterday. You know, look, people are talking about Leeds again, and I think a lot of that is down to Marcelo Bielsa. So I'm loving it, Dan.
Have you really noticed that, the connection between city and club again? Because I would say it's been rekindled, hasn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Like some of the games I was looking at actually for the extra ball that we're doing this week was Warnock era, and it was the game he got sacked in. There's 20,000 people there against Derby. That's just the way it was. You couldn't, even going as recently as the Heckingbottom era, when I was on holiday and I couldn't go, so I was trying to give my season ticket away. No one would take it. It's like, please, someone just go and sit in this seat for one game for me. You're messaging like a dozen people, everyone's like, nah. Whereas now, the general sale doesn't exist anymore, does it?
And
I think there's a lot of criticism from certain quarters about all these people coming with glorious supports and stuff, but at the end of the day, it's been terrible. It's been an awful product on offer for years and years.
You can't argue with them. I mean, why would anybody want to go watch Steve Evans Leeds? I didn't want to. I can remember being in the Peacock on a Tuesday night match and really being torn, like, can we just not just have another drink here? And I think we eventually got into the ground with about 15 minutes had gone, and it ended up being 0-0. And it, like, going into the stadium was the worst decision we could possibly have made under those circumstances. Beautiful, warm pub, beer on tap. That's how a pub works. Everything was set up for a nice evening, went and ruined it watching Leeds. And there are some of those memories in this book when you look through and see that, like, well, yeah, Histon is there, Sheffield Wednesday 6, Leeds 0, Portsmouth 6, Leeds 1. But that's going to be really fascinating, actually. A lot of those, I don't know if it's some weird Leeds United cultural idiocy, but I'm kind of looking forward to getting stuck into Watford 3, Leeds 0. It's just, but I mean, there are positive matches as well. So, it's good that it's not.
Do you know what I think? I know what you're angling at. What you're angling at, Moscow, is that I think it frames Bielsa really, really well, does this.
That's not what I was angling at all, but you know, I wouldn't disagree with you.
That's what I'd take from it, though, that the extension from that is that because of all that, the Histons and all those kind of really dark times, you can now enjoy this a lot more, I think.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. And also, it is what Leeds is, really. I remember when I was talking to the publisher of mine while I was still working on it, and he was saying to me and the editor, he's like, so obviously this will be filled with all the glorious moments in Leeds United's history that really bring all the fans together and that everybody celebrates. And I was like, I mean, do you know much about Leeds? There will be some of that, obviously, but there's a lot of the other side of things are what really brings Leeds fans together as well. So it's good to have Leeds 7, Southampton 0 next to Colchester 3, Leeds 2. From being a year apart and just remembering, that this is all.
That's so Leeds, though. So Leeds, isn't it? It's all very much Leeds. What's next for you then, James, after you've done this? Now this is all sort of finished and boxed off.
Sadly, going back to Melbourne, although this winter I won't be too disappointed to see the back of it. I'm told it's not even a bad winter as well so far anyway. I haven't seen any snow. So yeah, back to Melbourne, but I'm sort of been crisscrossing between Melbourne and Leeds for the best part of a decade now and got a lot of mates here and plenty of reasons to come back. So hopefully next time I'm back we might be in the big league. But yeah, just on Dan's point too about the losses, I think you probably learn more from the players too, because you know there's why we lost those games, why we lost those fixtures. That Portsmouth one is a very interesting one. It was in November, I think, and all the players knew, well, we're going down. You know, there's no way we're going to stay up. It was in November, so pretty damning indictment basically on that season. But yeah, back to sunny Australia, and I don't miss a game though, so I'll be up at stupid hours watching games that end at 4 a.m. But there's so many fans who do that in Australia, and when I have a chat to different people here, a lot of people, Leeds still a big deal in Australia. Absolutely, you
know, that's because of Shane Lowry, surely.
Oh, it is, yeah, absolutely. Shane's, you know, the momentous 11-game loan stint or whatever it was. But you know, Leeds toured Australia this summer, British time. No second division clubs go and tour Australia, but Leeds still has a massive following back there, and probably Liverpool, Man United, and then maybe even Leeds is the third biggest team back there. So it'll be plenty of others to watch the football with.
Yeah, and plenty of scope for it to grow as well if we get up this time. Ups and Downs is the name of the book. The inside stories from Leeds United's biggest matches. You've got a foreword in there by Norman Hunter as well. Author James Willoughby, thank you very much for coming in and seeing us.
Thanks for having me, lads.
And good luck. Get behind James. Buy the book.
Where?
Good question. It is www.upsdownslufc.com.
There we go. Sold. Cheers, James.
Thank you.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.